This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm with Layla Mudin, who is our registered dietitian, master's degree holder in the field of nutrition, and together we field questions that you send to us via radioprogram@aol.com. That's the convenient email address where you can send us your questions, and we'll tackle them every week on our weekly podcast, Q&A with Layla. And we have a question about fulvic acid.
Fulvic acid.
Can you spell it?
F-U-L-V-I-C.
Okay.
Fulvic acid.
And what is it, and what type of products contain fulvic acid, and what are they designed to help?
Well, it's really more in the soil, and because our soils are more depleted with the use of pesticides, herbicides, less so. Mm-hmm. It's a beneficial compound. I think it might be classified as a mineral or some other type of micronutrient, but it's less in the soil now. Ben writes, "Hi, I'm hearing a lot about fulvic acid these days. Supplement companies tout that it helps the body to better absorb minerals. Do you agree that it's beneficial?" Okay. Well, it can be.
So I'm just looking this up, and it says fulvic acid at Amazon. There's all a huge selection of fulvic acid products.
Right.
There's Dr. Axe, who recently interviewed me.
Yes.
And he has an article entitled "Seven Fulvic Acid Benefits."
Yay.
It improves gut, skin, and brain, and you have that in front of you.
Right,
okay.
Right. Yeah. Can improve gut health, immune function, helps boost digestion, nutrient absorption, can protect the brain, cognitive health, improves detox, can lower free radical damage and inflammation, improves energy levels, lowers pain, repairs and protects the skin. That's interesting.
And what's the science behind that? Is there enough research to really merit these claims?
I'm not sure. But apparently Dr. Axe thinks that there may be enough there. And that it was naturally occurring. Our food supplier used to be higher in this particular component. But our soils are more depleted, just like they're depleted in zinc.
Dr. Weil rates it, but this is an old post from 2011. Does not rate it that high. He says fulvic acid is a compound found in soil, is used in gardening and landscaping to improve plant growth. That doesn't necessarily mean it helps
so
us.
So they help them absorb their nutrients.
Right.
Maybe.
It is also being promoted in supplement form by marketers who claim that it offers many health benefits, including detoxification, better mineral absorption, anti-aging effects, and immune enhancement. I've seen nothing that indicates a scientific basis for any of this. Now, thinking about this 5-6 years ago, but also in a quick scan of the scientific literature, I'm not seeing much. And now, is Dr. Axe quoting, generally his views are pretty reasonable.
Yes.
So, but I'm there's a dearth of scientific substantiation for this.
Well, I imagine that it wouldn't hurt. However, research suggests that fulvic acid is safe for most people to take. Although there hasn't been much research done in special populations, such as those with impaired immune systems or pregnant women.
Right.
So
because of the possibility there's some impurities with it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Considering it's completely natural, found in all soil, easily flushed from the system once it's consumed, it probably poses little side effects, but you never know. However, when people take high amounts of fulvic acid in a pure form, it may be less so. So in a supplement form or in a liquid form, it could be that you're getting more fulvic acid than you ever would from the environment.
What it does say, though, is that certain shilajite, that's the name for this, containing products sold over the internet have been found to contain heavy levels of lead, mercury, and arsenic. Let me see if that's an actual study. So that is a concern.
That's a concern. You'd want to make sure that those products are tested or that you're sourcing it well.
And I would be wary of products maybe from India. Oh, yeah. So is this lead, mercury, and arsenic in U.S. and Indian manufactured Ayurvedic medicines? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean the fulvic acid products.
Well, here's an easy way to get more fulvic acid for anybody interested. Eat organic produce.
Right. And do you mean because there's a little dirt clinging to it?
Yeah, maybe. Or grow some in your garden.
But we tend to wash the dirt off.
That's true. Or
We try.
Mm-hmm.
So
you'd really have to scrub to get everything off.
The documentation for the health benefits is sketchy. Mm-hmm. But also the documentation for the harm is by inference that this is, it references an article that just talks in general about the potential for products to be contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that the manufacturers of these products run some assays to make sure that their products are free of heavy metals, because soil does contain some bad things, and also free of bacterial contamination
for
people with suppressed immune systems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And any residual Roundup.
Isn't there a garden thing called humus as opposed to hummus? Humus is that you apply to your garden. Maybe one of our listeners will email us with a lowdown.
Yeah, I'm not a gardener
humus.
Yet. Yeah.
You're not a...
Not yet. I'm not a gardener yet.
You haven't
We still have to build the house.
You haven't slowed down sufficiently. You're still an urban...
I'm still an urban...
Dweller.
I'm still an urbanite.
All right. But you aspire to be a gardener.
I do. I absolutely aspire to be a gardener.
Okay. So, we'll do an update in a few years. Okay. So, this is a good point at which to pause, because we want to offer our... sponsors an opportunity to share this message with you. So here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening, and we do appreciate your support of our sponsors. They help underwrite the production costs of this podcast. So, let's hear what the next question is.
Oh, we've got a very interesting question from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are my questions about the quest to destroy cancer cells? Is as follows. Can cancer cells metabolize vitamin C instead of glucose? I realize that vitamin C can compete with glucose for the same insulin receptors. Does vitamin C induce an insulin response?
I'm not sure if that's correct, but I think that there is some competitive inhibition between
vitamin C and
glucose. In other words, too much glucose will actually prevent the ingress of vitamin C into the cells. So diabetics may have a higher requirement for vitamin C. So is properly speaking, is ascorbic acid processed into sugar? Is it made into sugar? No, I don't think that's the way it works. And is it can be a fuel for the growth of cancer cells?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that cancer cells are all over the map. There are many, many variants on cancer cells. And since vitamin C is an essential nutrient for normal cells, it's possible that some cancer cells actually get some nutritional support from vitamin C. However, the way that vitamin C works against cancer is in a different way. The doses of vitamin C that are required to inhibit or kill cancer are much higher than merely to provide nutritional support. So when you take 500 milligrams of vitamin C three times a day, that's not going to kill cancer. But if you take intravenously 75 or 100, that could potentially
grams.
75 or 100 grams.
Right,
which is 75,000 or 75 or 100,000
milligrams.
Yeah.
Then, which you could never take orally.
Yeah, you could never tolerate that orally. No. That would be taking 75 or 100 vitamin C pills by mouth. But intravenously, it seems to work in a way similar to oxidative therapy. It seems to generate free radicals, which are destructive to cancer cells, but which normal cells seem to be able to resist.
Yeah. Interesting, thoughtful question. Okay. Thank you, Michael. All right. Ah, question about popcorn. This comes from Ron.
Okay.
Dr. Sinatra had an article indicating that, this is actually a different question about something Dr. Sinatra wrote. It's about HDL.
Oh.
Ron writes,
How did popcorn, is that, are you free?
Yeah, I was looking through some of the later questions.
Oh, so there's going to be a question
There will be a question on popcorn either today or next time.
We're jumping the gun.
I'm jumping the gun. Okay. I get so excited about these podcasts. So Ron writes, Dr. Sinatra had an article indicating that HDL over 90 could be a problem. My overall cholesterol is 198, but my HDL is 135.
HDL is 135. Wow.
Yeah. I'm a 68-year-old male. Okay. I don't smoke or drink. Mm-hmm. Should I be concerned?
Okay. So this is some new think about HDL. So first problem is that doctors until recently just looked at overall cholesterol. They said, oh my God, his cholesterol is what?
198.
It's not even that high. But some doctors, they want everybody's cholesterol to be 160. So it's like lower your cholesterol. But then they don't look at the HDL. So now doctors are aware that HDL has a beneficial effect and mitigates the effect of high cholesterol. So I just talked to a woman who has a cholesterol of, I think it was like 260.
Mm-hmm.
But she also has an HDL of 79.
Hmm.
Okay. So I didn't know what was going to happen with that situation. She's 72. She's concerned. Shall I lower my cholesterol? Lower my cholesterol. Finally, I said, get an EBT heart scan.
Yes.
We did the test. And she has zero plaque.
She has zero plaque.
So it's not uncommon, especially among women who are healthy in general, to have a high cholesterol accompanied by a high HDL with zero plaque. And evidently the HDL is protected. But we're introducing a little nuance into this thinking.
Right.
But before
we even go there.
Yeah, go.
He has quite a high HDL, 135.
Right, really high.
We often see that in people with hypothyroidism.
It is one of the things that can happen with hypothyroidism.
So I wonder.
But, but let's presume he does, he's okay otherwise. So this nuanced thinking now about HDL is that, there can be situations where HDL backfires. And I'll tell you how that came up.
Hmm.
They came up with these drugs that amplify HDL. And they thought, on the principle that HDL is good, so let's...
It's get the garbage truck that carries out the bad stuff.
Yeah, let's get the body to make more HDL.
Yeah.
These drugs cost hundreds of millions of dollars to develop and test, and they failed miserably.
Hmm.
They failed miserably. Great theory, and it was shot down when the rubber meets the road in practice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a paradox, right? These people had very high HDLs, but they were not at lowered risk for cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they may have been at slightly higher risk. So the new think is that HDL can undergo certain modifications, or you can have a high HDL, but there are subtypes of HDL.
Yeah.
And that sometimes if you don't have the right HDL and it's high, especially in the setting of inflammation, that's double trouble. That's a double trouble.
Yeah.
So you also did a little research on this.
Right, right. Apparently this might have to do, a high HDL coupled with a high C-reactive protein, which is a marker of inflammation. And if you have a particular genetic SNP, a particular polymorphism, then that may kind of set up the stage for these people who have already had heart attack with high HDL.
So this was in a study of people who already had heart attacks.
Who already had increased risk for recurrent events.
Okay, so here's the deal.
Yeah.
This study looked at people with high HDLs who'd already had heart attacks, which is already a paradox.
Yeah.
That is an uncommon scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what they're saying is that HDL is not 100% protective.
Right.
That if, especially if you have, you know, angina, or if you needed a stent with your HDL, or even a heart attack, then that HDL, something's wrong with your HDL, basically.
Right.
And they're studying what that is. Now, what's our practical advice to this guy? Because he's sitting there and he's heard about these new studies, and he was in a fool's paradise because his HDL is high. Mm. What should he do?
Well, get a VAPS NMR and look at the particles, an EBT heart scan, definitely,
yeah,
to see bottom if
line,
anything's happening.
Bottom line, so in other words...
He's 68, so why not?
In other words, you cannot completely rely on the HDL to predict your cardiovascular risk. But I'll tell you, bottom line, it is still very valid to look at HDL as a protective factor, and the majority of people with a high HDL, and particularly women, are very protected against cardiovascular disease.
I'm on a listserv of some wonderful nutritionists who are in the know about all of this in integrative medicine. And I do remember someone saying, and citing the research, this was many, many months ago, so I don't quite remember, that a very high HDL like that may have something to do with toxic exposures.
Okay.
So that might
The body is kind of overproducing cholesterol or something like that.
In an effort to...
Yeah. You know,
have a bigger garbage truck?
That's one theory, yeah. And let's talk for a minute. Let's say you want to raise your HDL.
Mm.
How do you raise your
HDL?
Two
ways to do it in this order. Eat more fat, exercise.
And eat more cholesterol.
Yeah.
And I'm a case study of that.
The cholesterol comes in those foods. So.
I'm a case study.
Mm-hmm.
When I was macrobiotic and ate very little fat, you know, rice and beans and seaweed and, you know, seitan, which is pure wheat gluten and, you know, all that stuff. Lots of green leafy vegetables, root vegetables, but almost no fat and no animal protein whatsoever. Certainly no dairy, no eggs, no fish even, except maybe rarely. Maybe put some bonita flakes on for flavor in my rice.
Uh-huh.
My cholesterol was about 125 to 140, very low. And my HDL was about 35 to 40.
Huh.
When I completely flipped the script and started really consuming a lot of animal protein, and I may go for 12 to 16 or 18 eggs a week.
Great.
My cholesterol skyrocketed to as high as 230, but so is my HDL. My HDL is about 75.
Yeah. So the ratio is favorable.
The ratio is favorable.
If anybody's still looking at ratio.
And bottom line, I did have an EBT heart scan this year, and I did it with a little trepidation because, you know, do I really want to know? You know, maybe
you don't
want
to know, right?
You know, I put myself a little bit in the situation of a patient. You know, I was apprehensive about it.
Mm.
Zero. So the net result of that diet and that cholesterol profile, you know, plus exercise and probably some good elements of heredity, because I don't have a lot of family history of heart disease, was a no plaque.
Wonderful, wonderful. Did you celebrate with a big juicy steak?
I did.
Good.
I did. I got a porterhouse steak and I devoured it.
So Ron should be, maybe he should be concerned and get it checked out further.
Yeah.
EBT heart scan.
EBT heart
VAPS scan. VAPS, NMR, something like that. Maybe toxic exposures. I have to go back and look at that now because it just occurred to me as we were talking.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we have time for popcorn? Because now you got me.
We have time for popcorn. There's here's the question. Here's the question.
I don't eat popcorn.
You don't eat. I'll eat popcorn on occasion.
Yeah.
Yeah. We like to watch a movie with some popcorn.
Yeah.
With some coconut oil.
You know.
Or some melted butter.
It's like one of those things where you gotta circle back.
Abby writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, my family and I have for years enjoying homemade popcorn using organic kernels, organic butter. We make it in the microwave."
Didn't Dr. Sinatra write something about that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, and in fact, we featured it on our website.
Right, and I pulled up that article. "We make it in the microwave in a microwave safe silicone corn popper. Now I read Dr. Sinatra's article mm-hmm. on your website stating that microwave exposes me and the popcorn to harmful radiation. Should I stop using my microwave?
You know, I got to say, I don't agree. I mean,
microwaves, I don't believe are that.
I respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think that that's a problem.
If you have an older microwave, Abby, get a new one.
Right.
They're more shielded.
Right.
When the microwave
and
is running.
And don't stand
don't
there.
Don't stand there waiting.
Well, when you're making popcorn, you're looking at it. It's like,
you gotta watch it
because it could, you know. Because when it starts to burn, you know.
Right. Abby, what you should do, this is what we do at home because we like popcorn and if we're watching a movie, it's fun to munch on. We use a big old pot with either some coconut oil
cast iron.
Mm-hmm. With coconut oil or olive oil.
Yep.
And we've got the non-GMO kernels. We put it in there with a tablespoon of oil. Pop, pop, pop. Maybe we'll put some melted butter on it later or something like that.
You season it at all so you like
a little
flavor.
Salt.
Yeah.
Salt, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, sometimes these,
flavored
popcorn, that's like flavored coffee. I don't really like
it. Oh, no. Hazelnut coffee and all that stuff. No.
Hate it.
Do it on the stovetop or get an air popper. Dr. Sinatra's article says, get an air popper. That's mm-hmm. probably the best thing to do.
Well, also, I do have a problem with some of these instant Jiffy Pop things because I don't think that the oils they use are very good.
No, the trans fats. And especially the microwave popcorn. You don't want to use that.
Yeah.
There's always partially hydrogenated oil in those. Mm-hmm. So
and what about the movie popcorn?
Oh, forget about it.
Yeah.
We don't know what that is.
And the other thing
and
is...
And that butter, we don't know what that is.
And the other
it's
thing is,
butter,
is that it's like, the pricing is really weird because it's like $10 for like gargantuan amount of popcorn that's going to, and then
it's
like $9 for like...
The medium?
Medium means tiny.
Right.
Because there is no such thing as a small popcorn. Medium is tiny.
Yeah.
And that's $6. And then,
they really gouge you on the
price. Yeah, so your night at the movies could end up being like a $35 night for
a lot
two
of people.
People
wind up getting a bucket of popcorn. I want you to consider this, please, everybody. That is the same size as your office waste paper basket, your bathroom waste paper basket. Nobody should be consuming.
Right.
Food in that amount,
right?
Even popcorn. So,
well, the thing about popcorn is, there's always room for popcorn.
I know.
It's really
airy and
addicted.
Light,
yeah,
but
it's one of those things that's just a trigger food. It's a trigger food.
It's a trigger food.
Yeah,
and it's the motion of reaching into a bucket or a bag and up to your mouth over and over and over again.
Yeah. And that's the atmosphere they try to create in a theater is that it's like total stimulation. Mm-hmm. It's like olfactory. And gustatory, like with the food and the drinks, the cola beverages and the stuff on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, your brain is like...
Pass those raisinets.
Yeah.
That was my favorite as a kid.
So here's a tip. Before you go to the movie, eat.
Absolutely. Eat.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't go to the movies to eat.
Don't go to the movies to eat.
That's a bad idea.
No, just watch the movie. Enjoy it.
Unless you are... Steven Spielberg, and you have your own home movie theater, and you have like a gourmet organic kitchen, and then they bring in the treats, You have a modest sized theater for like, four dozen seats, for
dinner theater.
Right. Dinner theater.
Dinner theater.
It's part of your home. You have like, 40 cushy seats and a large screen. I wonder if these podcasts are very successful, we might be able to afford that.
Because that could be fun.
If we have millions of listeners and the money is going to pour in, well, I don't know.
We'll see.
Okay. All right. Well,
Abby, thank you for your question.
Okay. And then we can buy all the popcorn we want.
Right.
Which we would probably choose not to have because we're so virtuous. Okay. So we're getting a little giddy here. So I think it's time to conclude this broadcast. We're having too much fun. Thank you for your questions. Thanks for joining us for yet another podcast. And stay tuned for next week. Also, we'll listen to our other podcasts where we interview great guests. And sometimes I tee off on important issues. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.